evening, everyone. This is Jenna. I am filling in for Ingrid's show tonight. And because of popular demand on the topic of EMFs, Ingrid dove into, and the health effects. So since the callers were saying we should do many shows on this subject, because the information, there it is complex. So I invited two guests on, two scientists, two PhD published scientists, one being Martin Paul. He's a reoccurring guest, and also Dr. Kevin McCarron. And both have agreed to come on because the subject, you know, it's as far as documenting how the neurological disorders work in the body, biological pathways, I think it's best to actually talk with scientists with their understanding, especially of Alzheimer's, ADHD, dementia, and the CJD, the Khrushchev-Yakov disease. And then along with documented sperm decline, that means less births. So I would like to bring on my guests. And since they've been on before, we don't have to go through a whole biography, but if you have opening comments, maybe we'll start with Dr. Paul and then go to Kevin. Dr. Paul, good evening. How are you?
I'm doing just fine, Jenna. How are you doing?
Great, thanks. I really appreciate you taking time to come on. And when we last talked on the phone, you said you specifically wanted to talk about force. I think you brought up something about force and pulsation something that you have noticed lately. Go ahead, please.
Okay, so first of all, electronically generated electromagnetic fields, EMFs, are very different from most natural EMFs. And this was first discovered back in 1831 by Michael Faraday, the great British physicist, who showed that electric currents generate an electromagnetic field in the space around them. And those fields are coherent, that is, they have a whole structure which is consistent through the whole field, such that they put very strong forces, electric forces and magnetic forces, on electric charges in our bodies. And that's the primary mechanism by which EMFs produce biological effects. The most natural EMFs, in contrast, are made up of gigantic numbers of individual photons going off in different directions with different polarities and phases and often frequencies. And so those are incoherent, whereas as I said before, electronically generated EMFs are coherent. They behave as a single object producing long, strong forces. The safety guidelines that are supposed to protect us don't protect us from these electronically generated EMFs. They only protect us from heating effects. And so they're completely bogus. They simply don't work. The other thing that's important is that wireless communication, first of all, uses those electric forces to work. You know, you have to have those electric forces in order for these fields used in wireless communication to actually communicate. The other thing they use is pulsations. They use pulses where you get huge changes in the intensities of the EMFs, and those huge changes in intensity are what carry the information. So pulsation is extremely important, but pulsation itself is completely ignored by the safety guidelines. So again, the safety guidelines are bogus. They simply don't work. So what that means is all the assurances of safety that the telecom industry gives us are simply fictional. They do not have any scientific merit. And that's the world we live in. Now, there are effects in the body on every single cell in the body, but there are certain parts of the body which are much more sensitive. They include the nervous system, including the brain, They include the heart in terms of the electrical control of the heart, and they include the reproductive organs, and the testis has been extensively studied in terms of reproductive effects. So that's part of the, I guess that's my introduction, okay?
Perfect. Thank you. Kevin, welcome. Thank you for coming on. Would you have any opening comments on the subject?
So I'll say I'm 25 plus years of using all manner of electrical stimulation targeted to the brain. That's including wireless transmission as well for trying to extract neural signals, etc. I'm not going to disagree with Dr. Powell about there being evidence within the literature of coherent electromagnetic waves perhaps having some effects. I would perhaps just wonder about what the actual scale is in real world environments when much of the experiments that have been done where they're looking and trying to induce calcium type currents in neurons in the context of being exposed to electromagnetic fields are often done in vitro preparations. It's very highly focused beams, and the you have to be very careful about taking a in vitro studies and then trying to extrapolate them to walking, talking human beings and their constantly changing environments. Is there an issue with people being electrosensitive? Yes, I think this is well documented. What my concern with these next generation of communications, radio communications, telecommunications, is rather more just the pervasive surveillance, the networks that they're building with them. The pathophysiologies, etc., I think I could find probably more conventional reasons as to why they would be we would be seeing the effects. Not saying it's not an effect. I would wonder about the scale and contribution that they're actually making in real world environments.
Well, I do know that the Children's Health Defense had a court ruling, a Supreme Court ruling, August 2023, that the guidelines going back to 1996 were no longer effective. Because if you look at the growth of the telecom industry, this huge industry, over the past 30, 40 years, the guidelines haven't changed. So understanding that
I would agree with that. Look, you need a constant reevaluation of any guidelines as technology evolves, and and it's right to be, especially when dealing with corporations, where you know they have a constant track record of pushing the boundaries with respect to concern for the public versus their bottom line. My concern is we've had 4 years of very, very contentious back and forth in a very charged environment, particularly around the use of medical countermeasures for COVID, etc. And there's a very large proportion of the internet convinced that 5G is enabling the building of autonomous nanobots within their bodies to form basically wide area networks, etc. And this, in the context of that, it's been a very corrosive line of argumentation when what we should have been focusing on was the toxic expression products of those vaccines and what it means for the population at large.
Can I make some comments?
Yeah, sure.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, so first of all, yeah, I think there's been a lot of false statements made about COVID, but I don't know that it has terribly much to do with anything having to do with electromagnetic fields. And I think we need to stick with the science. And so let me give you some examples of things where I think it's very clear that both in animals and in humans that things are going on that are absolutely clear. And so I'm going to give you one example from an animal study that I have cited a number of times, which I think is a extraordinarily important study. It was published by Elsweffi et al.
If you could provide a link, I would be very, very happy to look at it.
You can easily find it if you just go into Elsweffi, E-L-S-S-W-E-F-Y, and it's a rat study, and it was done in 2008, and probably if you just use those three things, you'll find it. But it was a study done on radiation from what they call cell phone tower radiation, and most of the rest of the world calls it, I'm trying to remember what they call it, mobile phone base station radiation. So you can use mobile phone base station radiation to search for it, and you'll find it. It is an incredible study where they found that extremely low intensities of these mobile phone base station radiation, equivalent to what you get from a cell phone about 9 meters away from your body, so about 30 feet away from your body. And this produced extraordinary neurodegeneration in the brains of these rats, such that within 4 weeks, 28 days of this radiation, 2 hours a day, extremely low intensity, you got massive neurodegeneration where about 34% of the brain cells were dead in 4 weeks. And when they studied those, the effects, they studied 11 different effects that they could measure. They found that each of them were blocked by amlodipine, which is a voltage-gated calcium channel blocker. And so what I've shown in my work is that most of the effects go through the activation of these voltage-gated calcium channels. I call them, abbreviating them, VGCCs, and that therefore you can block the effects with these calcium channel blockers. And this is by far the best study that's clearly shown this with all 11 of the things that were measured that had to do with the causation of this massive neurodegeneration. You get, and it was also true that the behavioral effects that were shown, four of them, were also ameliorated by these calcium channel blockers, this particular one, amlodipine. Now, okay, so that's one study. Now, let's talk about some others. In humans, we have good reason to think that a lot of the decline in male fertility is produced by EMFs. How do we know that? Well, we know that in part because there have been a whole series of studies done where you can get semen samples from human males, you split them in half, and half of them you expose to cell phone radiation, Wi-Fi, or various other kinds of radiation that we're exposed to all the time. And what happens? A lot of the cells die of apoptosis. What happens else? you get a large decrease in motility, and motility is essential in human sperm in order to get fertilization. You also get a lot more mutations in the DNA of those cells, so you get DNA effects. And these have been shown experimentally with human sperm. So there's no question about this happening. And in animals, you also get effects on the structure of the testis, which makes the testis much more dysfunctional. And we also know around the world, we're seeing decreases in sperm counts in human males. We're seeing decreases in sperm motility in human males. We're seeing increases in apoptotic cell death in human males. And what do we do? And we know that all those things are caused by EMS. Now, that doesn't mean that that is the sole cause of these effects. But what we're seeing is, over time, that those changes in male fertility correlate very well with the increase in exposures of EMFs. So when you have something that you absolutely know can be produced by EMFs and is occurring essentially all over the world, and you just ignore all of this stuff, it's just absolutely shocking. It's just, this is not... So the science is there. It's very clear. And we just have our blinders on, okay? Now, let me talk about some other things. There's a lot of propaganda about cell phone radiation not doing anything. There are a number of things where there have been studies done where there are effects on the side of the head where people use their cell phones and much lower effects on the other side. So what the side of the head where people use their cell phones is called the, I'm trying to remember the name now, the ipsilateral side of the head, and the other side is the contralateral side. And so you see big differences. What kind of differences do you see? You see differences in cancer causation on one side than the other. You see differences in DNA damage from one side to the other. You see differences in tinnitus from one side to the other. You see differences in the effects on the blood flow in the brain from one side to the other, and there are several others. So when you see that kind of pattern, it seems to me, anybody's common sense tells you that we need to pay attention to these. These are not...
It's not a benign technology. I think we would be in agreement there. The issue that I would have is you can be led somewhat astray by the title. I was just scrolling through the study you suggested, and looking at the coils that they were using and the methods that they were using. It's a very non... It doesn't represent the real life circumstances that you would have, where you would be surrounded by these coils, for example.
I don't know what coil. You're talking about the El Swefi study?
Yes, yes.
The El Swefi study used real mobile phone base station radiation. They didn't use the coil.
And you can look at the coil setup that they've got that they put around the rats, and the distance is very short. And
It was nine. It was the equivalent of the intensity was the equivalent of a cell phone nine meters away from the rat. And that was the average intensities. I mean, one of the problems we have, average intensities don't tell you anything about biological
effects. I have it on the screen. I'll just put it for people that can see it my side, right? So, you've got something there that's approximately you could just about squeeze the laptop in. And what you would have there is a hyper-uniform field within that, even if you said okay, it's low intensity within the realm of what's being done with cell phones. And like I say, it's not that I don't disagree with you about there being problems here. Again, it's the what I would have concern with is the extrapolation from a methodological setup like that, where the
it's not a methodological process. It's an actual
right,
mobile phone radiation radiation.
It's a data point around.
No,
here.
It's a whole bunch of data points. They measured a whole bunch of things.
Yes, and I can see the type of setup that they've done, and having spent most of my career dealing with these types of electrical devices for brain stimulation, etc., I'm very familiar with field effects, penetration, etc., and these they're not that analogous to the real world. And again, there's this
I don't understand how you can say that when you're talking
you need to let me finish what I'm saying, right? EMF radiation, can it be a risk factor? Yes, we know this. This is why there are a whole bunch of guidelines. Jenna just talked about children's health defense and that they need to be updated, etc. And in a world where we have corporations, they never have a record of looking after the best interests of the public. It would be important to say, yes, here's a study that you can look at and say we can see something in an in vitro experiment. Okay, but is it possible? How well does it translate to the real world?
I just wanted to interject the decline in population, in replacement populations, would be a data point that I would consider in part of if we want to carry on with future generations and still keep having babies, we have to take this into account. Because I do recall one of the studies, Martin was saying that, you know, there's a point within three generations, the mice stopped reproducing. They were no longer fertile.
It was actually quicker than that. Yeah, this was a study that was published by Magris and Zenos in Greece about 10 years ago now, where they took mice and... they took pairs of mice, young mice, one male and one female. They stick them on the ground in little cages so they couldn't run away, and in an antenna park. And they lost fertility not in three generations but in three litters. So a litter only takes about 30 days in mice, so their gestation period is very short. And what they found, so typical litter in mice is very close to eight, and it does, they usually don't vary that much, eight pups per litter. And what they found was that in the first generation, they were getting about, roughly five. So there was a decrease in fertility immediately. This was from, again, from radiation in an antenna park down at the ground.
Excuse me, we're coming up to a break, and when we come back on, I'm going to play a three-minute clip from Alice Stewart, the woman who knew too much, voices raised celebrating her work. Hold on, everyone. Thank you for tuning in. This is Immunize Wisely, and we'll be back at the top of the, or in just a couple minutes.
truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Hi, Tom Bolton for Ease Off. I know so many of you are finding our Easy 4 carcass drop and lift an essential tool for your meat processing operation. But today I want to spotlight four of our new products. First, our right height hog cradles with steel or aluminum frames. Our customers love this back-saving innovation that enhances sanitation and speeds production. Next, our beef cradles with stainless steel or aluminum frames eliminate rust and corrosion. We hope you'll compare our quality and prices for this essential part of your processing line. Our cradles are especially effective when used with our power skinner. And finally, our hook tumbler will keep your hooks clean and polished. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC, 417-932-6419.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email ProudSouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
One of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs. For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
HempPaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for Hemp Paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit HempPaste.com/RBN.
You played the clip.
Sorry?
Welcome back. Welcome back. This is Jenna, and my guests tonight are Dr. Martin Paul and Dr. Kevin McCarron. Dr. Kevin's website is McCarronDojo.com, and he is streaming on his channel at this point. And Dr. Martin Paul, he has many published papers on the internet, and I can't say that he has a website. However, what I wanted to do was bridge the conversation with childhood disease and childhood cancers, and specifically because, you know, my partner Brian lost his daughter to leukemia when she was 13. So what I wanted to play was a clip on the woman who knew too much, and her name is Alice Stewart, and she was in the early 1900s one of the first epidemiologists that started to ask good questions. And how about we just listen to it, because I think there's a lot of information packed in here. So if you could play that, please.
The year is 1953, and there's a problem. Childhood leukemia rates are skyrocketing. Doctors were at a loss. They had no idea what was causing it. Everyone knew it would take a brilliant mind to discover the cause, but no one would have guessed it would take a fighter to convince the public to listen. Luckily for us, Dr. Alice Mary Stewart was both. When Alice, then working in Oxford, caught wind of the rising leukemia rates, she had to investigate. But getting funding as a woman wasn't easy. A reality Alice knew all too well. Like years before when she was studying at Cambridge and was openly mocked by her entire class just for being a woman. Experiences like this taught Alice that as a woman, she just had to work harder. When Alice finally got her funding, she started by conducting massive surveys with mothers of children with leukemia. And when the results came in, there it was, clear as day. The rising leukemia rates were directly linked to pregnant mothers who were getting x-rayed. This was a common practice at the time, because then, low doses of radiation were deemed safe.
Yes, the atom is on its way.
In fact, x-rays were everywhere. They were used for hair removal, as a gimmick to sell shoes, and even as a way to fight aging.
It employs a mask which contains radioactive elements.
What's more, this was the nuclear era, a time when the possibilities of nuclear energy seemed limitless.
Peaceful power from atomic energy is no dream of the future.
So when Alice, then an unknown British scientist, published her work showing that even low-dose radiation could be lethal, the backlash was severe. Studies began appearing, discrediting her work. While hugely flawed, these studies were enough to tarnish Alice's reputation, and soon she began losing funding. But she pressed forward and continued to build her database, self-funding the endeavor. And for the next 20 years, she collected enough data to show, without a shadow of a doubt, that low-dose radiation was lethal. While her findings were eventually accepted and major changes were made, it took decades.
Nearly a billion x-rays are taken every year. According to the federal government, a third of those x-rays are unnecessary.
And it's hard not to wonder, if it had been a man that came forward with these findings, would it have taken so long? Alice's work is cause for celebration, but how she was treated should stand as a reminder that prejudice runs deep. And at the end of the day, it hurts everyone.
And already, through the healing power of the atom, we can all look forward to happier, healthier lives for ourselves and our families.
Industries have already been on a trajectory to overcome any challenges that health effects might pose. So I did want to play that because I think it was well done. And it had impact for in Brian's life, just to recognize that this could be a factor. And I also wanted to bring up that there are papers out there indicating that the EMFs have in neurological disorders, a prion misfolding effect. And I've been listening to Kevin McCarron at McCarronDojo.com, and that's McCairn. And the misfolding of prions is, well, evident in the rise in the CJD disease, the Khrushchev-Jakob disease, if I remember correctly.
I would try to correct a little bit there. That I don't think we have more reproducible methods with respect to inducing protein misfolding, and these are essentially at the molecular level, as we've begun to understand amyloidogenic and prion-catalyzing epitopes, particularly in viral proteins, etc. I don't think that there's a particularly strong case for EMF radiation in CJD. Again, it's one of those very difficult to study domains, and of course you should always use the precautionary principle. I mean, the example that you were just playing with respect to the leukemia in the 50s, and you know what was, I imagine, a burdening industry in X-ray machines, where there's a profit motive, etc. We should always tread very carefully, and we know far more nowadays against. And you know, it's important to make a distinction here that X-ray radiation, I mean, it's part of the electromagnetic spectrum, but it differs radically from microwave radiation in that it's ionizing, and therefore we know it's capable of causing genetic damage. And you know, if you look at the EMF scale in between X-ray and microwave radiation, you have well, from the microwave band, you then go into visible light, where most people are familiar with, and you then get into far infrared, ultraviolet, etc. And we know that the strength of any of those bands within the electromagnetic frequency can cause problems if they're misused. The strength is too high, the exposure too long, and you know, I'm a big proponent for trying to encourage the public to be informed and to follow precautionary principles. And you know, something like the microwave radiation with telecommunications. Like, I don't carry my cell phone in my pocket, right? I don't use wireless earbuds, etc. I generally have, I do have a wireless router in my house, but most of my machines are cabled and routed. These are sensible actions that most people should be thinking of. And you know, I don't think it's a good idea to have your laptop in on your lap for hours at a time, right? Put it next to you, or put it on a desk, etc. And these, like I say, I'm not going to disagree with Martin too much about that there can be effects. I just I think it's important to sort of rank order the potential problems that you could have, and with respect to sort of neurodegenerative conditions, there's far more data pointing at the biological in terms of peptide exposures, virus exposures, etc. And like I say, it's not that EMF couldn't be playing a part, but we know that these neurological disorders were around before any sort of large infrastructure was put into electromagnetics. And the you know, there's just a, you know, just be careful about what the corporations are trying to sell you at the moment. And you know, you don't have to go far back for them to tell you that smoking cigarettes was good for your health, right?
Right. Well.
So maybe I can comment.
Dr. Paul, please.
Okay. So first of all, you know, the distinction between ionizing radiation and non-ionizing radiation is a very important one. And it basically has to do with the question of what a single photon can do, because ionizing radiation, single photons can have great power, but with non-ionizing radiation, they have very weak power. The problem is, as I said before, is that the way in which non-ionizing radiation, I'm talking specifically about electronically generated non-ionizing radiation, such as we use for wireless communication, it works as the whole coherent field, and it works through electric and magnetic forces produced by that whole electromagnetic field. And that's the way you get effects in the body. So it has nothing to do with the properties of individual photons. All right, so that's the first thing. The second thing I want to say is that the studies with ionizing radiation, you were talking about X-rays I think it shows, in fact, that in vitro studies are extraordinarily important, because it was shown in cells in culture that in cells outside the human body that you could get chromosome breaks, you could get all kinds of other kinds of mutations occurring in individual cells. And so I don't think that it's proper to just throw out this in vitro study.
Oh, I wouldn't throw it out at all, Martin.
They're extraordinarily powerful.
I wouldn't throw it out at all. They are very powerful studies. They're important for generating hypotheses and certainly for looking at mechanisms. And if you want to get a patch clamp onto some cells, you want in vitro as a very, very good way to go. But there's always the caveat that comes with it, which is, well, how much does it translate into walking-talking experimental or a subject in this instance?
Well, I mean, yes, that's always a question. But what's also true is if you're studying effects that occur at the level of individual cells, the most powerful way to study them is in cells and culture. And so let me finish here. You shouldn't throw out the things that are there. And our bodies are made up of astronomical numbers of cells, and those cells don't change all their basic properties just because they're in our bodies.
As a well-seasoned experimentalist with electrical stimulation of tissues, okay, the data from in vitro studies, it's very good for generating hypotheses. And this, it's a staple of the scientific method. But the gold standard is to take, so let's, humans, if things were working the way that they should, you shouldn't be doing tests on humans. You should say, okay, we've got in vitro cell studies. We see calcium channel influxes that are occurring in response to electromagnetic stimulation. What do we see when because we can do the same methods in vivo, right? Which is what I would do. Okay? And then you run electrodes into the brain or into a tissue organ, and then you see if the same power can induce these effects. And more importantly, are there behavioral changes that you can correlate with any changes that you can pick up? And like I say, I've spent many, many, many frustrating days and years trying to get all those variables to line up to see if we can prove or disprove something around, in this case, it was trying to use for therapeutic uses. And it's hard. And even when you're pumping via a wired contact into the brain to get changes that you think you should be getting, that the equation that you draw out on the board or the data from the in vitro tests would perhaps be indicating. And this is the point that I'm trying to get across: translation. And the it's okay, just
can I respond to that?
Sorry,
I guess we're going off. Yeah,
yeah.
Another break. We're going on a break.
Okay.
Yeah, please hold over. And we already have a question on neurological studies for video addiction in youth. I'd like to ask that when we get back.
Sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we the people are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few. After taking Extendivite for about 6 months, I've noticed improvement on the numbness of my hands and wrists from the carpal tunnel syndrome. I will continue to buy product. This formula is very powerful. I am feeling much better. My heart rate and blood pressure is stabilized. My lower edema has reduced, and lower leg pain due to blood clots has disappeared. This product has relieved what appears to be an angina problem: pain in the chest after climbing stairs and short on breath. I'm quite happy about it. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home.
Email Tom at republicbroadcasting.org. T-O-M at republicbroadcasting.org.
Welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. You're tuned into Immunize Wisely, and there is a chat room, immunizewisely.chatandgo, if you wanted to sign in and see the extra comments that are scrolling through on this interesting conversation I'm having with Dr. Martin Paul and Dr. Kevin McCarron. specifically on EMFs and its effects. We know that they are accumulative, and we also know we want a future generation to make it through and live in perpetuity. So I was wondering, since I personally had an issue with video addiction with my son, I was wondering if there's any neurological signals or evidence in regards to studies that have been done that can indicate why this happens. And Dr. Paul, maybe you want to chime in there?
Yeah, and let me just say, when I argue for an EMF effect, it doesn't mean that nothing else is happening. And I want to make that absolutely clear. I'm not saying when EMF causes something that there aren't other causes that come into it. So that should be clear. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about addiction. And let me just say, I have not published anything on addiction. But what is clear is that there is, of course, a very large literature on drug addiction and how addictive drugs work in the brain. And one of the things that is of extreme interest is that right at the core of the addiction process is the activation of two of the voltage-gated calcium channels in the brain. One of them is called CAV1.2, and 1.3 is the other one. And they both have unique and different functions in the process of addiction. So one of them is elevated first in the addiction process and the other one later on. And when they act in sequence, then they produce drug addiction. And so what that means is that the very thing that is the direct target of the EMFs, in fact, have central roles in the addiction process. What's also true is that Henry Lai, back about 30 years ago, published a whole series of studies which showed that you could get addiction-like effects in, I believe he was studying rats, but it might have been mice, I'm not sure. And they involved the release of endogenous opioids in the brain, so there was a large increase in these opioids in the brain following EMF exposures, and that the opioid receptors in the brain then were responsible for a series of changes, of addiction-like changes. They could be blocked with an opioid receptor blocker that works in the brain. And so there were a number of other effects that were shown. Now, the effects that Henry Lai studied, and I say back 30 years ago, these are really amazing studies, is that you could learn this addiction process by classical conditioning. That is, the physiological changes in the brain caused by the EMFs would be learned by classical conditioning. So, you know, in the case of Pavlov's dogs, where you're ringing a bell, the bell would then produce this addictive-like response. So I think that this probably has a lot to do with things like internet addiction, smartphone addiction. I'm not saying that there's the whole story in that process, but I do think it's likely that these are true physiologically addictive devices, and we need to be very careful as a consequence of that.
Thank you for that. Yeah, go ahead, Kevin.
Yeah, so this is an area of systems neuroscience I'm very familiar with. It's corticobasal ganglia networks, and particularly dopaminergic innervation to limbic regions, frontal cortices, and we have so we can look at basic rodent brain stimulation studies, Okay, so you can put an electrode into the dopaminergic nuclei of the midbrain, and you can train the rat to press a lever, and it will get a small electric current delivered to that particular network. And in those instances, the degree of we would presume it's pleasurable effect for the rat, because they will keep doing it, and they will do it till they forego food, and essentially will go till they drop. And there's a whole architecture, network architecture, that you need to understand that happens around the use of fast moving, pretty graphics, and dopamine dynamics in video game smartphone addiction.
I'd like to hear more on that. We are at the top of the hour break, so please hang on to that thought, and thanks for listening, everyone. We'll be back in a few.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee that's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today, because you can handle the truth.